Book of Genesis, chapter 22. Book of Genesis, chapter 22. We'll read first 14 verses. It came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham, and said unto him, Abraham, and he said, Behold, here I am. And he said, Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for burnt offering, upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of. And Abraham rose up early in the morning, saddled his ass, took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, clave the wood for the burnt offering, and rose up and went into the place of which God had told him. Then on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said unto his young men, Abide ye here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it upon Isaac his son, took the fire in his hand and a knife, and they went both of them together. And Isaac spake unto Abraham his father and said, My father. And he said, Here am I, my son. He said, Behold, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? And Abraham said, My son, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. So they went both of them together. And they came to the place which God had told him of. And Abraham built an altar there, laid the wood in order, and bound Isaac his son, and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son. And the angel of the Lord called him out of heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here am I. And he said, Lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him. For now I know that thou fearest God, seeing that thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him for a burnt offering in the stead of his son. And Abraham called the name of the place Jehovah Jireh, as it is said to this day, in the mount of the Lord it shall be seen. What we read here is without parallel. There's no precedent anywhere in the Old Testament. It is certainly one of the most profound of all biblical accounts. It's an event in the life of Abraham. It is a test from God. We read in verse 1, God did test Abraham. And what follows is an account of human faith, and it's made mention of in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 17, by faith, Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac. So it's an account of faith. It's a trial of Abraham's faith. It is also a record of God's providence. It's a record of God's faithfulness. It's a record of the ability of God. It's also an account of personal willingness on Abraham's part and surrender on Isaac's part as well. And it, as we all know, is one of the best, most well-known biblical accounts, and serves as a foreshadowing of God sending his own son to Calvary, which will touch on in the close of the message. But we want to primarily dwell upon the lessons that we find in this account for you and I that are saved. I want to call your attention to verse 13, and Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold. That's the climax of what we've read. The word behold, of course, is indicative of something extraordinary, something momentous. It's a word of exclamation and wonder. And the verses leading up to that tell us how Abraham got to this point. And behold. And that's our subject, the journey to behold. How Abraham got to this and behold. We, of course, live in a world that's filled with trouble. A world in which there's one obstacle after another. It's a place of spiritual desolation, basically a wasteland as far as spirituality is concerned. Place of restlessness, a very unsettled place. But as children of God, saved by the grace of God, our lives ought to be unique. Experiencing the wonder of the Lord. And that's what we have here in verse 13. We have Abraham experiencing the wonder of God. And behold. And our lives ought to be marked by that. And behold. And behold. Something momentous. Something wonderful. Our lives ought to be filled with exclamation. Our lives ought to be filled with wonder. Concerning the Lord. So let's look first of all at the setting of the text. Back in Genesis chapter 12, we see Abraham at the age of 75. And he is called of God to leave his homeland and go into a land that he knew not of. We read in verse 1 of Genesis chapter 12, "Get thee out of thy country, from thy kindred, from thy father's house, into a land that I will show thee." So if you were to ask Abraham as he's packing up to leave, "Where are you going?" He would say, "I don't know. God will show me. God just told me to leave." It was a call of separation from the ties of natural man, his country, his family, his kindred. Connected with it is a promise concerning something that God would do. God would bless Abraham abundantly. He would bless his seed. We see that in Genesis 12, verses 2 and 3. We see the response of Abraham in Genesis 12, 4, "And Abraham departed as the Lord had spoken to him." And the act of this faith is referred to in Acts 11, verse 8, Abraham leaving his father's house. So Abraham left his homeland, left everything that he was familiar with, based upon the Word of God, based upon the promise of God. He is 75 years old. We go forward to Genesis 15 and verse 1. And God again appears to Abraham. And He reveals to Abraham that, "I am everything that you need." He says, "I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward." And reading on in chapter 15, God promised him a son. Promised him a son. The years would pass, and Abraham and Sarah still had no children. And we come to Genesis 17, and Abraham is now 99 years old. Still no son. And God promises him that the next year, he and Sarah would have a son, and they were to name that son Isaac. So Abraham and Sarah, from Genesis chapter 12, waited day after day, 25 years, for the promise of God to be fulfilled. In Genesis 21, verses 2 and 3, we read of the birth of Isaac. 25 years has passed. And oh, what joy filled the hearts of Abraham and Sarah when Isaac was born. Again, 25 years between Genesis 12 and the birth of Isaac. And there very well could be about 20 years between Isaac's birth and what we read here in Genesis 22. Isaac's not a little child when you get to Genesis 22. That's obvious from several things you read in the account. So coming to Genesis 22, we read, "And it came to pass after these things, after 25 years of waiting for the promise of a son, after the joy of the birth of that son, after many years of child rearing, after these things," and then we read, "and God did test Abraham." And what follows in verse 2, "Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah and offer him there for a burnt offering upon the mountain, upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of." Everything in that verse is contrary to natural affection. It's contrary to carnal reason. It is a test. It is a test of Abraham's love for the Lord. It is a test of Abraham's faith in the Lord. It was a test to reveal the chief affection of his heart. Was it Isaac or was it God? Was it Sarah or was it God? It was a test. It was a test to manifest how far Abraham was willing to go for the Lord. And that's a good question. How far are we willing to go for the Lord? Now, most will answer that question without giving it much thought. "I'll go wherever he wants." No, you won't. No, you won't. Most of you won't. But how far are we willing to go for the Lord? It would be the ultimate test of Abraham's life. I mean, you go back to Genesis 12, that was a test. But this is the ultimate test of Abraham's life. And that brings us to Abraham's journey to and behold. Verse 13, "And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold." And if you look at the verses leading up to that, you see a life. You see a walk. You see an adventure of faith in the Lord. You see a walk, a life, an adventure of love for the Lord. God was very real to Abraham. In verse 1, God called Abraham by name and said unto him, "Abraham." And God proceeded to talk to Abraham. This is something that Abraham was accustomed to. It was something that he was very familiar with. He knew the voice of God. We read back in Genesis 12 in verse 1, "The Lord had said unto Abram," Genesis 12, verse 7, "and the Lord appeared unto Abram and said." In Genesis 13 and verse 14, and the Lord said unto Abram. In Genesis 15 and verse 1, and the word of the Lord came unto Abram. In Genesis 17 and verse 1, the Lord appeared unto Abram and said. And in Genesis 17 verse 3, and God talked with him. And in Genesis 18 verse 1, and the Lord appeared unto him. And in Genesis 18 verse 13, and the Lord said unto him, Abraham. And in Genesis 21 and verse 12, and God said unto Abraham. Abraham knew God. He had personally experienced God in his daily life. And he had the blessed assurance that he belonged to God, that God loved him, that God was faithful, that God was able. This was all very real to Abraham. He had the assurance that God always did what was best for him. And he knew that God had a plan for his life. And he knew that God was in absolute control of all things. These things were very real to Abraham. So he hears the voice of God. And he was sensitive. And he was available to God. We read in verse 1 of Genesis 22, God said unto him, Abraham, Abraham, and he said, behold, here I am. Abraham heard that voice. He knew that voice. And immediately there was a response. Here I am. It is a response of availability. It is like saying, I'm ready, God. I'm willing, God. So it is a response of availability. It is a response of readiness. It is a response of willingness. It is a response of submission on Abraham's part. But as soon as God said, Abraham, he had Abraham's attention. Does God have your attention? That's key. That God has our attention. And Abraham again responds, here I am. Those are words of sincerity. Those are words of purpose. Those are words of passion. Those are words of zeal. God says, Abraham. And Abraham immediately says, here I am. And I believe it was immediate. We see he was submissive. He was obedient to do what God told him in verse 2. We read of God's command to Abraham. And notice some points of emphasis here in verse 2. Take now. Now, right now, Abraham. Now. Not 10 years from now. Take now thy son, thine only son. Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him for a burnt offering. Abraham knew what a burnt offering was. Upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of. That is a staggering demand. That is a very startling demand. Abraham would have never expected such a demand from God. So before you say, oh, I'll go all the way, you don't know what God may demand. You don't know. Our reply to that, how far will we go, ought to be, I hope, all the way. I don't believe any of us could say for certain, I'll go all the way. You don't know what's included in all the way. Abraham knew that it was God, when all hope was gone, he knew that it was God who miraculously and graciously and lovingly gave him and Sarah Isaac. And he also knew that God's promise for his future and all the promises to him were connected to Isaac. And now that same God is commanding him to offer Isaac in sacrifice as a burnt offering to the Lord. That again goes against every natural affection of Abraham. It goes against all the fatherly inclinations of Abraham. Take now thy son, thy only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and offer him a burnt offering. It goes against every fiber of Abraham's being. Abraham could have never imagined being faced with such a command from God. But one evening, in a moment, there it was. Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and offer him for a burnt offering. Again, this is unexpected. This is not something you can plan for. Abraham never planned for this. He never imagined that God would issue such a command. In verse 3, we read of Abraham's response. And Abraham rose early in the morning. Now, the record is silent about the emotions of Abraham. And I think sometimes people get to think that Abraham just got up in the morning, just kind of nonchalantly, just got everything ready and headed to Moriah. Oh, I don't think so. Just because the record is silent about the emotions of Abraham, all you have to do is put yourself in his place to sense what he must have felt. Without a doubt, there was great turmoil in his heart and in his mind. Without a doubt, there was much spiritual wrestling going on. But the point is, regardless of the emotions and struggles not recorded, Abraham rose early in the morning. And we are told that he prepared his mule for the journey. Imagine the emotions as he did that. And not only that, we see that he cut the wood necessary for the burnt offering. Don't tell me that Abraham didn't feel something when he was cutting that wood. I don't buy that Abraham did not struggle and that there was tremendous spiritual warfare going on at this time in Abraham as he cut the wood for the burnt offering. Imagine the emotions and struggle as he did so. And then he gathered two of his servants and Isaac. Imagine what he felt when he gathered Isaac. Imagine the thoughts that went through his mind. I'm sure he thought back on the time and when God promised him Isaac. I'm sure he thought back on when Isaac was born. I'm sure he thought of the child rearing that had taken place up to this time. But all the emotions that he must have felt, the struggles that he must have had. But my point is, it didn't keep him from doing what God said. He rose early in the morning. Regardless of the depth and the array of emotions and struggles that Abraham was feeling, he knew and he personally experienced the person where the instruction came from. He knew God. He knew the promise of God. He knew that there was no circumstance where God would break His promise. And he knew that God was able. And he knew without a doubt that God loved him. And that God had his best interest in mind. And in spite of all the emotions and struggles, Abraham rose up early in the morning to do what God said. And again, regardless of the depth and array of emotions and struggles that were confronting Abraham, he rose up early in the morning and he went to the place that God had told him. Knowing God and knowing that God had a plan for his life, he embraced that plan. He trusted God with that plan. And that morning, regardless of the emotions and the struggles, he stepped out with God. He didn't go alone. And we read in verse 4 that it was a 3-day journey. That morning, Abraham stepped out with God and began the journey. And he began and he continued the journey. With these words etched upon his heart and his mind, take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and offer him a burnt offering. Be sure of this, this was not an easy 3 days. There were struggles that were going on for 3 days. There was a depth and array of emotions going on during those 3 days. I believe that they were the longest 3 days of Abraham's life. Imagine the thoughts going through his mind. What am I going to tell Sarah? She doesn't know anything about this. What am I going to tell her? So there's Abraham. He's on a journey that he could have never planned for. He's on it with God. And for 3 days, difficult and trying days, days of intense spiritual warfare, Abraham just kept moving in the direction of God's leading. And Abraham remained sensitive to God's voice. And Abraham remained available and ready and willing and submissive to God. And as a result, he was never paralyzed in despair. He pressed on, overcoming all the unrecorded emotions and struggles, realizing that God's faithfulness and love would get him through. And he was energized by faith in God. And after 3 days, God said to Abraham, so God, Abraham's still listening. He still knows that voice. God says to Abraham, this is the place. This is the place. Imagine what he felt. It's now come. This is the place. But I believe that during those 3 days, Abraham had learned much. And he was strengthened. I'm not saying he didn't have emotions. I'm not saying he didn't have struggles. But he was strengthened during those 3 days. And upon arriving at the place, Abraham says to his servants, "You watch the mule while Isaac and I go and worship." And then he said, "And come again to you." God had taught Abraham something. These were words of hope and faith. They reflect a deep inner trust in God. Abraham was expecting God to do something miraculous. In fact, we read in Hebrews 11, verse 19, that Abraham fully expected to offer Isaac as a burnt offering. But he believed that God was able to raise him up. That's a remarkable statement, by the way, because up to this point, there is no record of God raising the dead to life. But Abraham believed that God was able to do so. He believed that God would do what was unheard of. And in verse 6, we need to get this picture. And Abraham took the wood of burnt offering. Again, imagine the emotion. Laid it upon his son Isaac. So Isaac is carrying the wood. He took the fire, that is the means to start the fire, in his hand, and a knife, and they went, both of them, together. So there's Abraham and Isaac walking toward that mountain. It says he saw it afar off. We don't know how far they walked. And then they walked up that mountain. Isaac's carrying the wood. Abraham's carrying a knife and a means to start the fire. And we see them walking up that mountain. And as they walk up that mountain, Abraham is holding on to the faithfulness and the ability and the love of God. And I believe there's still a wide array of emotions and struggles going on. And then in verse 7, Isaac asks his father a question. Where's the lamb for the burnt offering? That's almost a heart-stopping question. Dad, where's the lamb? We've got the wood, got the knife, we've got the means to start the fire. Well, where's the lamb? And Abraham gave a very clear and confident response to his son's question, verse 8, "My son." And just stop right there. "My son." Imagine the emotion in those two words. "My son." And then he said, "God will." He didn't say God can. He can. But this goes further than that. He says God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. There's faith, there's assurance, there's conviction in those words. It seems as if they stopped while Isaac asked that question and Abraham answered it, because we next read, "So they went both of them together." In other words, they continued the journey. And you see him walking up that mountain. Abraham and Isaac making their way up that mountain, putting one foot in front of the other, holding unto the faithfulness, the ability, and the love of God. We read in verse 9, and they came to the place. They've come to the exact place where Abraham would offer Isaac. And we read, and Abraham built an altar there. Again, imagine the emotion as he builds that altar. Imagine the struggles as he builds that altar. But regardless of the emotion, regardless of the struggles, he's embracing the faithfulness, the ability, and the love of God. He built an altar there. He's got the altar built, and then he laid the wood in order. And again, the emotion and the struggles. And he bound Isaac, his son. Can you imagine what Abraham is going through at this time? He binds his son. And then it says he laid him on the altar upon the wood. We must not overlook, it's a different message, but we must not overlook the faith of Isaac here either. In each of these acts, there's much emotion. There's many struggles. But Abraham performed every one of them, holding unto, again, the faithfulness of God, the ability of God, and the love of God. And then we read the inconceivable words of verse 10. And Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son. See the picture. Abraham with uplifted knife in his hand was a manifestation of how far Abraham was willing to go for God. And that he was willing to forsake all for God. You know, again, we sing the song, I Surrender All. I guess a lot of people have different definitions of all. But this here is a picture. He's willing to forsake all. He's not only willing to forsake Isaac, but also Sarah. Because Sarah's not going to take this news well. He's willing to forsake everything. I mean, if he kills Isaac, what's he going to tell his servants when he gets back? It is a picture that he's willing to forsake all. He's in a place where everything is consecrated to God. That's the place we ought to want to be. Everything consecrated to God. And in verse 11, the angel of the Lord called on him out of heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. Notice in verse 1, he only said Abraham one time. But in verse 2, because Abraham was so intent, he called his name twice, Abraham, Abraham. Now, I believe in verse 1, he may have whispered, Abraham. But that's probably not the case here. In verse 11, he's called by name twice. And Abraham's response, same as it was in verse 1, here am I. In spite of all the emotions and the struggles that Abraham had experienced, he's still sensitive to God's voice. And you may have a wide range of emotions about many things, but you must remain sensitive to God's voice, available, ready, willing to submit to God. And then from verse 12, we see that Abraham's act was a manifestation that he had a deep reverence for God. God says, now I see that you fear me. And then you read verse 13 and 14. And behold, what a place to be. And behold. And imagine the emotions that Abraham felt when he saw that ram caught in that thicket. The praise and the thanksgiving that he experienced at that moment. For application to ourselves, and we see in verse 19, he returns to his servants, him and Isaac. Oh, what a story they had to tell. We learn that from this account that unexpected, inconceivable, incomprehensible events can come into our lives at any time or in any place. That which is beyond human reason can come upon us. And the best way to be prepared for these events is to have a trust-filled relationship with God, to be in tune to the voice of God, always available to God, always ready and willing before God, embracing His faithfulness, His ability, His love. And then we, like Abraham, we rise and obey when it doesn't make sense. And it doesn't make sense. But in spite of that, he went on. When it goes against our natural affections, you know, I've had people tell me, God would not have me leave my family. Oh, really? You're the exception to all the examples in the Word of God? God would not have me go clear on the other side of the world. Really? God would, but you've already decided He won't. Because you've already decided how far you'll go for God. And most people have. Most people determined long time ago how far they will go for God. How far ought we to go for God? As far as He tells us to. That's the answer. As far as He tells us to. Don't let anything stop you from the blessing of behold. Had Abraham never got up that morning and left for that place, he would have never beheld the lamb caught in a thicket. He had to get to that place. And I want to tell you today that there's a lot of times God's people don't see a lot of things because they're not in a place to see them. And behold. You know, that can be our life. And behold. You just keep doing what God tells you to do and your life will be filled with and behold. And behold. Abraham was willing to let go and relinquish and surrender all to God. Now all of this, of course, is a picture. Abraham's willingness to give up his only son humanly illustrates the greater love of God for man. For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son. It illustrates the greater love for God. No matter how far you go in the service of God, you'll never go as far as He went to save your soul. Never. You won't even come close. God sent His Son because of that, you can be saved. God sent a Savior. Because of that, there's hope for lost sinners. So there's many lessons here for you and I in living a life of faith. There's also the beautiful picture of God sacrificing His Son, Jesus Christ, in order to save sinners. Jehovah Jireh, God will provide. And when Abraham said, God will provide Himself a lamb, that not only included that day, that looked beyond. God will provide Himself a lamb. And Jesus Christ is our lamb. And He is your only hope today. Brother Jim, if you'd come and lead us verse 1.